karma phala pradam.
Janma karma phala pradam.
Kriya vishesha bahulam.
Kriya vishesha bahulam.
Bhogaishwarya gatim prati.
Bhogaishwarya gatim prati.
Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam.
Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam.
Taya pahrta cetasam.
Taya pahrta cetasam.
Vyavasayatmika buddhih.
Vyavasayatmika buddhih.
Samadhauna vidhiyate.
Samadhauna vidhiyate.
Okay, everybody. So when we're starting this 3 weeks, it's going to be a little bit, it's not much different, it'll be a little bit different. I'm going to go much deeper in the sense that I don't feel like I have to start from scratch. I can take certain things for granted and just kind of push the envelope a little bit more than normal. A little bit more Sanskrit in terms of spending more time in the verses, breaking the sandhi and making you make sure you understand the verse, you know, and the chanting is always, that you're doing is always good, so that you can just spend this time getting a little bit more familiar with Sanskrit for those who want to. The others, you can just kind of listen and enjoy if you're not interested in it. It's not that you have to become Sanskritist, but then there's some people who really do want to get involved with it, and I want to create that opportunity for us in this 3 weeks. There's another, with our meditation, so I want to just give you some support and some guidelines for how to be with these meditations, because we are kind of churning up a lot of things that are kind of deeply there, and you may or may not have ever even worked with them. So when I'm asking you, I didn't tell you this time, I was more or less assuming it, and I don't want to assume anything, so I'm going to make things really kind of the inner rules for each one of us, our own safety and our own feeling of well-being. And that is, say, if I ask you to imagine or to bring the image of a person, maybe a person who's really been hard, not a little disruption in your life, but someone who's really affected your life and that you've suffered over the effects of that for some time. So those are the bigger issues, the issues that even though I've been working on them for a long time, they're still there, and I still feel some constriction around those things, you know, or around whatever event, whatever the situation was that happened. It could be something traumatic that happened in childhood or with my parents, or it could be a love relationship. There's just so many things that can go in very, very deeply, and they can cause, and I'm really speaking from my own experience, I'm not just making it up, I know from my own life that there are one or two of those that were really, really very, very hurtful, and they just plagued me for years. I learned how to Vedanta, I learned how to handle it, but that didn't mean that I got rid of kind of the closure or the hurt that situation caused, you know. And so I would guess to say that most of us have one or two really, really big things that don't just go away, that they're abiding in there, even though you're not dealing with them every day, you're not thinking about them every day, they've caused some sort of a closure in your heart. And so when I went today, I was kind of asking you to bring forward that person and do some work But now I'm going to modify that just for your own, because I know there was a lot of tears and probably a lot of feelings were coming up. And some of you might feel like, oh, I can't handle that. This is too much for me. So what I would say is to listen to that. And if that comes up where you feel that you can't deal with that particular event right now, then pick a lesser one. Pick the next in line. Yeah, the next biggie in line. And then if that one feels too much, pick the next one. But let me just give you a little support here. And that is that you, your being, yourself, is not damaged. It is not damaged. It will never be damaged. No amount of work you do will make it better or make it worse. That's the security that is, when, as we gain self-knowledge, that security we have. And what that security allows us as we start to really get into these complexes and where a lot of pain is being stored, there is that inviolate self, you know, that is not going to be hurt and is not going to run away and can really, really contain and handle and welcome whatever it is. But what has to happen in terms of my buddhi and my whole psychic system is that I have to grow stronger and stronger and stronger with that knowledge. So the buddhi gains strength with that knowledge because abiding in myself in kind of this inviolate space, I can actually be in a healing way with the worst of the worst that has happened to me in terms of my experiences. But if I don't feel that confidence yet, that's fine. If you don't feel that confidence, just go a notch up or a couple of notches up to where you do feel, okay, this is hard, but I can work on it. Because it becomes less and less and less hard as you are able to welcome these type of dark or painful emotions. It becomes kind of a relief, because they also want to be released. They want to be released, you know. But they can't be released when we're afraid and pushing them away. We're just creating more of a wall. And we keep that wall in place because what happened was so traumatic and I'm just not ready. But, you know, my therapist, the Jungian analyst I worked with for many years, actually, he was Jewish, and a Jewish guy who had become a Christian because Carl Jung was Christian. You know, so he became a Christian because he was a devotee of Carl Jung. And so he talked about in the Bible, I think it's Jacob walking around the walls of Jericho, this city that had a big, huge wall all the way around it. And he and his army wanted to enter. So he walked around that wall 9 times before they were able to penetrate it, you know. And he uses that example. I think Jung also used this example. So, you know, if you can't enter right away, if there's just a big no, if the gate is, you know, like that, you just walk around the defenses and be gentle, you know. Talk to it and say, you know, this was really a big hurt in my life, or this person really, really hurt me, and that is true. And if you're not ready to deal with it, you can say, if it's too much, it's too hard to deal with it right now, that's fine. But sometime we'll deal with it. So the psychic goes, we will. You say, yes, sometime we'll be ready to deal with it. So be kind and be gentle, and know that there are a lot of tears inside. There's a lot of tears, there's a lot of grief, there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of betrayal. Everything's in there, you know, because most of us in this Kali Yuga, we have not come through life unscathed, you know. We're carrying a lot of things. And to the degree that we can process it and be with it, you know, and let it and have the freedom to experience it, to that degree our psyche is relieved of that pressure and that tension. There's an inner tension, underlying the conscious mind. You just get used to living with it. Sometimes you don't even know, you don't even think that tension or that hurt or that damage or that scar is something that you can actually be free of. You just get used to dealing with that underlying hurt or betrayal or whatever thing it is. But I think with one of the great things about knowledge, even in terms of our own psychology, even in terms of the therapy that we do, if you've ever done any type of professional therapy, as you gain knowledge, your psyche is more willing to do that deep work because your self is there. You have a self. You have the ananda, the love, the wholeness of your being, which can hold all of it without... There's nothing stronger. I can't even... It's not even strong, stronger, strongest. Those aren't good enough words. Because your being, you know, is not an object that's being damaged and battered around. You know? And so it can handle... Your being can handle the whole universe. You know? Just think of the whole universe with all the Rakshasas and the Asuras, millions of them, and millions of Devas, and they're all clashing, and all this stuff is going on, and worlds are exploding and blowing up. That self is fine, no problem. And so it can certainly handle our individual stresses and strains. So that comes like when you start out a little smaller, if you feel it's too much for me right now, that respect, I would really respect that, but then start lesser. And just start to realize that as you welcome all of these experiences, really welcome them, they start to dissipate. Because one of the things, dissipate means, you know, they just become less. They like spread out, the tension becomes less and less and less, the pain becomes less and less and less. It spreads out in your relaxation. So what we're used to doing is actually kind of the opposite of that. Because it's a pain, it's a hurt, the psyche is just making sure there's some good, strong tension around that, holding it all in place. And that's what we're used to doing, and when it starts coming up, we're used to kind of pulling it back and feeling upset and angry and hurt and all of these things and going with kind of projecting it all outside, and this person did this to me and hurt me so badly, and then that's actually just kind of a deflection. It's a deflection. It's a way of projecting that all out and working with it out here, but that doesn't help because that deflection, that projection can go on until you're dead. The same thing, the same thing, the same thing. This is different. This is allowing me to be with that and talking to it and welcoming it into my buddhi, into myself and accepting it completely, not trying to not feel. Not being afraid to feel all of that, and it starts opening up. And then as that happens, and I'm with that for some time, I can start saying, and often I personally found that your psyche will surprise you if you start looking at this person who I am now. You know, what did I gain from that? How did I grow from that? What is the good? You know, because it's never just one thing. There's always something. There's something that's balancing. And so to look, to actually see what that is can be really amazing, actually. You know, and it can also help you to not be so angry when you realize, oh wow, actually it was bad and very painful and awful, you know, and I wish it hadn't happened, maybe, but actually, you know, I wouldn't be who I was today and I wouldn't have this ability that I have today. And that, when you realize that, oh, I wasn't destroyed, I've actually grown, that also helps to relax all of that. So I'm going to talk about this now because I know that there was some pain and things going on in the room. pain is not a bad thing when we're at all, when we're with it in a way that is healing. It's actually just like tears are not a bad thing. They're very purifying and they release so many thoughts and so much tension. Yeah, but I have to, if I learn how to be a friend, like an inner friend, and be with it, it's so healing. And those things that are released in this way are really, your psyche becomes much lighter. You know, like the baseline of your psyche, it becomes much more relaxed and much lighter because you've shown that you can handle this. Until you've shown, welcomed, and are able to handle it, the psyche is kind of, the defense system is kind of, I don't know if she can handle this or not, so I'm going to just keep things real tight. You know, so just let it happen. Just let it happen naturally. Don't force anything. Just be a good friend. Don't try to rip open the flower, so to speak. You know, but let yourself, in fact, this 3 weeks, let yourself do this work. We won't be doing this type of thing every meditation by any means, but we want you to have some experience so that you can just do it on your own and watch yourself, watch the psyche become much more free. Okay? Okay, so we are we're on verse 45, but I might refer back to 44. Let's sit to chant verse 45.
Vaigunya Vishaya Veda. Vaigunya Vishaya Veda. Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna. Nirdvando Nityasattvastaha. Nirvando nitya sattvastaha. Niryoga kshema atmavan. Niryoga kshema atmavan.
Trigunya vishayaha vedaha nistrigunyaha bhava arjuna nirdvandvaha nitya sattvastaha. Niryoga kshema atmavan. So I think with Sanna and Sharada, some of you are taking some Sanskrit classes, so you're probably starting to learn some Sandhi, right? Some Sandhi. So these are Sandhis. Like when you see, if I always break the Sandhi for you, so you can see what's happening. So if you see the Trigunya Vishayaha, that means the Visarga has dropped. And then you have to learn why that visarga has dropped in class, right? Because I won't spend all the time doing it, but you have to learn that. If I say aha, there's a visarga there and it's not there, then that means there's a sandhi rule. So trigunya vishayaha vedaha, it's dropped again. Nistrigunyaha, that O becomes a visarga. Why does O become a visarga? What are the rules? Okay. Bhava arjuna. Why is it Bhavarjuna breaks into Bhava Arjuna? See what I mean? Then Nirdvandvaha, there's that O again, becoming Visarga. Nitya Sattvastaha, O becoming Visarga. So you see, it's common. Then Niryoga Kshemaha, now the Visarga has dropped. Different rule, you have to learn. Niryoga Kshemaha Atmavan. Then there's one other thing when we're doing I want you to notice is that sometimes something that looks like one long word, like Trigunya Vishayaha, that's a long word. It's actually two words and actually three. Okay. So if I were to break this, it would be Trigunya, which would become Triguna, which becomes Trigunya. That's getting a little too far for you, but nevertheless, so let's keep it as Trigunya, then Vishaya. So now you can see in Sanskrit that sometimes words come together to make one grammatical unit. It's called a compound. And that one unit, it'll be like the subject of a sentence might be made of four or five words. or two or three words, just the one single subject of the sentence. So here, this subject, Trigunya Vishayaha, is made of really basically two words. That next one, if you say Nistrigunyaha, that has a little upasarga or preposition in the front of it, so that's stuck on. There's a lot of prepositions that go in front of nouns and verbs and whatnot. Then if you look at the second line, Nitya Sattva Staha, three words become the subject of the sentence. Then Niryoga Kshemaha, Niryoga and Kshema, two words like that. So just watch, you know, as we're reading and as we're giving you the meanings. And then in the class, in the Sanskrit class that you're taking, then Sena and Charlotte can explain it to you. Yeah. Although I'm doing it more maybe because they're more, some of two or three of you or four of you are much more into Sanskrit than everybody else. So I'm also doing certain little things for them also in this class. It won't take a lot of time, but I think it's nice to point it out. So here, in the previous verse, if you remember, Bhoga Aishwarya Prasaktanam, for those people who have that prasakta, that attachment, their attachment is to having enjoyments and pleasures and Aishwarya, overlordship, power. So for such people that are so focused, and then Taya Aparita Chetasam, for those people, their minds, their minds are taken away by the flowery words of the Veda. In the first part of the Vedas, it says, if you do this karma in this particular way, you follow it very closely, then you will get this karma pala. Pala means the result, karma pala. Pala is actually a fruit. So the fruit of that action. What is the pala? The fruit, the result of that action. So the Vedas will say, you do this, this, and this, you can get to Swargaloka. You do this, this, and this, definitely you will have a child. You do this ritual. The rituals can be somewhat complex. They can also be expensive to do because you have to get all kinds of materials. You have to bring in a lot of brahmanas in order to perform the ritual. You know, it's complicated. Some of them take, you know, a few hours, and you have to sit there in the smoke. In fact, they'll say this later. You sit there in the smoke, and your eyes are dripping, and you can't breathe. You know, and then you leave and your clothes are just saturated with soot and smoke and they're finished, you know. And what to speak of the brahmanas who are doing these rituals every day. But the rituals are described in the most beautiful and flowery way, as are the results that you can get from doing these rituals. And so for someone who is, you know, attached to the karma pala, they're attached to those karma polas, to those enjoyments. I want this so that I can be happy. They're happy, they're ragas. I want this so I can be happy. And or I want this power, you know. I want this power, I want this overlordship. And there's rituals for all of it, for all of those things. So being carried away, if their mind is kind of robbed away or, you know, swept away by these flowery words, For such people, that vyavasayatmika buddhi means your buddhi, your mind, your intellect, the one that has knowledge and commitment. That commitment is not going to be vyavasayatmika. Vyavasayatmika means it's single-pointed, it's clear, it's definite. This is what I want. Period. This is it. That single-pointed clarity, such a single-pointed clarity is simply not available in the buddhi, samadha, in the buddhi, in the mind. It's not available for those people whose mind is divided up so much by their raga dvesha, by their desires, and by their wanting to have fame and power in the world and to have a certain level of enjoyment. Because then my mind is going to be divided into, because it's not going to be one thing. It's not like you can say, all I want in my life is a new Mercedes. That's what I want, you know. All I want in my life, I want a beautiful home, you know, where we can all live happily and we own it free and clear. Of course, all of the, you know, things. That also, but then I also would like, you know, the Mercedes, and I would really like to live in a good neighborhood. I want my children to go to a really top-notch school, you know, of course. You know, and I want to have a good job, one where I really, really enjoy myself and I'm really expressing myself. And this list goes on and on and on and on. And I want my husband to be a little bit better also. And vice versa. So what I'm saying, there's no vyavasayatmaka because the list doesn't stop. The refinement doesn't stop. And then how to work on all of these things, and when are all of them going to come, and which thing should come first. And so even in terms of which rituals should I do first, because I want too many things, is what it amounts to. And so we'll see later on, there'll be some beautiful verses about this kind of the flowering tree, you know, which leaves do I want to pick, you know. But the leaves to be picked, the fruits to be picked are like infinite. And so it's hard to have that single-pointed buddhi. That's not true for somebody who is a mumukshu. Because I've already, because of the viveka vairagya, right, I've already recognized that none of the pursuits, not even getting to swargaloka, because that's also time-bound, can give me the ananda or the wholeness that I'm seeking, where I can say, you know, it goes like this, krita-krityaha. That's what we say sometimes for moksha. Kritya, those things that have to be done, that need to be done for my wholeness, for my fullness, kritya, those have been done. I am a kritya, it has been done. Kritya, what needs to be done. Krita. Krita, kritya, what needs to be done, potential, possible. What needs to be done has been done, you know. It is, everything is fine, everything is well with me. And so I can be with this world in the way that it is. I'm not with this world in a way that I need it, or other worlds, so this world, I hope for other worlds and other births will really fill me up. That's no longer my issue at all. And so even, it's not my issue, even in terms of gaining this knowledge, because now, instead of fulfilling karmas, I have that attitude toward karma yoga. And that which we've just touched on, Krishna is only mentioning it up to this point. It's two more verses or so before he really gets into, well, what is exactly karma yoga? We've talked about it, but in terms of the Gita, we haven't really even entered into what is that buddhi? What is that attitude that that the mind needs in order to really gain this knowledge and hold this knowledge? Because that attitude, as I said, it's the Shastra itself says, Swamiji says, you'll see for yourself, it's what we call just a hair's breadth away from the mind, the shanti, that Ajnani, the person who is totally fulfilled in this knowledge, has. It's just a hair's breadth away. So that mind is so beautifully available for this knowledge that as the knowledge comes, it just pours into you. Because your mind already has an attitude that allows that doesn't cause much change, right? It's not like you're already, it's almost like you're already there. So it's not like, oh no, I have to do that, I have to do that. No, your mind is already has that shanti and that letting, taking, receiving everything is prasad, so the mind is so ready for that. But that will not be true for those who are still contained by the karmakanda, the first portion of the Vedas. As we'll see, the first portion of the Vedas is meant to take care of those people who are not yet adhikaris or qualified students for this knowledge. For them, they don't have this vyavasayatmaka buddhi, they don't have this mumukshutvam. And so then how to be in this world and fulfill my desires in the most benign way. How to stay within Dharma, fulfill my desires in the most benign way that can give me the maximum amount of shanti. Really, that's the first portion of the Vedas. So even the first portion of the Vedas, which accepts the samsari, the one who's, and the samsara, the nature of the creation and what, you know, all beings are doing and wanting before they come to that mumukshutvam, accepting all of that, how to actually being his creation in a way that is fruitful for your antakarana shuddhi, basically, for your shanti, for your antakarana shuddhi. Shuddhi means that purity. Purity means that freedom from raga dvesha. That's it, the purity. If we say purity, let me just talk about that for a minute. Purity is, you have to have it, like what if I say, okay, you have to have a pure mind. And what on earth really does that mean? What does it mean to have a pure mind? Okay. Well, it's a mind that enjoys shanti. But what allows the mind to enjoy shanti, that peacefulness, that sense of relative even well-being, all is well with me, where the mind, as Emma was saying the other day, that mind that acts out of ananda, that acts out of fullness, not out of, being less than or being incomplete or needing love, I'm acting out of love. Shanti gives you a sense of well-being, so I'm acting out of that love when I have even relative shanti, Like when your mind is just relatively young, your mind is at peace and just full and abiding, try to be mean. There's no one there to be mean, To be mean or to be curt or to, strike out at somebody. The mind has to be overwhelmed by some unfulfilled raga dvesha, really. Something unfulfilled where I'm really unhappy because I need things to be different for me to be happy. And then I'm speaking out of that, and I can even go toward a dharma because the pain and the pressure is too much. I really need that. Bhujja Swamiji uses this word pressure. It's too much pressure. I'm too unhappy. I have to break out of this. And this is in my way. And so what? Get out. I go. Because I have to. That's how much the pressure is. Unfulfilled raga dvesha. On a level, that's available to me. Or it's on an unconscious level creating a lot of pressure. Whatever it is. So antakarana shuddhi is a mind that is more or less, becomes more and more free of that pressure, free of the hold of raga dvesha, and ultimately free of self-ignorance. So the antakarana shuddhi that we work for relatively with karma yoga and with our attitudes actually, gives us a relative shanti, which with self-knowledge resolves into absolute shanti, an absolute shanti. That absolute shanti is not the mind. The mind will always have relative shanti. Means it can be mostly shanti, but it's capable of being annoyed or being dull or being tired or being irritable or whatever, even though it doesn't take you away too much. Still, it has its ripples. That's the mind. It's going to have its ripples to go out here, fly away off it. But yourself doesn't fly away. And yourself is the mind is resting in, and that viveka is there. The viveka, whatever the mind is doing, the relative shanti it enjoys, or its little hiccups and whatever, or the unconscious stuff that we're dealing with, and those are bigger hiccups, all of that is taking place in my buddhi in the manas, but the buddhi is resting in me. Even if you're an Ajnani, it's resting in me, right? Because I am really the Adhishtana, the very being which the whole universe rests in, but let alone my mind and body and sense organs. So it's already resting in me. But my buddhi is awake to that. That viveka is there. The buddhi recognizes and differentiates automatically, naturally, me from even its thoughts and feelings and its inner friendness. The inner friendness of the buddhi really has for its swarupa, my nature, my own self. But the buddhi is talking for me. Right? I don't talk. The buddhi is talking for me, is holding for me, is loving for me, within vyavahara, within empirical reality. Right? But I, the buddhi, knows me as the one that is itself, because of whom it enjoys any being at all. I am its being, and the being that I am, the Atma, the self that I am, is ever Shanti. I am always Shanti. I can never be changed. There's nothing that can ever be done to me. And that's all what we call aparocha. Aparocha means it is immediate, direct recognition. Myself is self-shining. The buddhi is the immediate, direct recognition of that fact. And when that's the case, I am feeling that buddhi and totally differentiated from it. Differentiated means I recognize the wholeness and the silence and the well-being and the ananda of myself that will never and never change. I can never experience it to change. It can never change. It just simply is. So, for such a one, that jivasayatmaka buddhi, you know, it is there for the one who has knowledge, and that absolute peace is there. You know? The karma yoga is the way to get to that relatively, but to get to it, the absolute peace has to do with recognition that takes place through knowledge. So the relative shanti recognizes and differentiates itself from the absolute shanti. Relative shanti is different than the absolute shanti. Because the relative shanti, why we say relative, is because it can change, because it's due to a mental state. A mental state that is very stable due to karma yoga. But it's a mental state. Yeah. But then, that mental state that belongs to the buddhi rests in myself, which is not a mental state. Even if there's ripples in the antakarana, ripples in the mind, there's no ripples in me. And so I can welcome all those ripples. It's all right. Yeah. Because I'm all right. And I can welcome all of the emotional unconscious and all of the things that I'm carrying inside and all of my reactions outside. It's okay. Because I'm okay. And I'm not going to become not okay. And so the buddhi's, I would say, its attachment is to my being. Its attachment is to the Atma, to the Self, to Ishwar. So it's more and more going to be with Ishwar. So here, the last line of 44 is the person, you know, that for these type of people who are still seeking bhoga enjoyments, that vyavasayatmaka buddhi samadhyatna buddhi, it's not available. Just because of the pursuits. The pursuits negate that possibility. So he says, Arjuna, bhava Arjuna, don't be that. What should he says, trigunya vishayaha vedaha. First sentence here in this first line. He says, the Vedas, Vedaha, the Vedas, there's four major Vedas, but they all have the same tatparya. They're all unfolding the same thing, just putting emphasis in different areas. Rik, Yajur, Sama, you know, the Atharva, these four Vedas, we don't have to get into that. But these Vedas, the karma, each has the karma kanda, and these Vedas, Trigunya Vishayaha, they're subject matter. What they are dealing with, the vishaya, what they're dealing with is trigunya. It's comprised of the three gunas. Three guna becomes trigunya. When you see something taking a vriddhi letter, like E becomes I, that usually means it's a tadita. Here it means that which has for its subject matter, that which it has is comprised of three gunas. So trigunya vishaya vedaha. What are the three gunas? Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. What is comprised of the three gunas? Maya. Maya is Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Sattva is that which reflects consciousness. Rajas is the energy, the activity principle. And Tamas is what is responsible for the coming into grossification or from a human. You look at it from a human as kind of a quality. A sattvic person is one whose mind enjoys Shanti, antakarna shuddhi, you know, is available. That's a sattvic person. A rajas person is somebody who has anxiety, agitation, perhaps, a tremendous amount of energy and also ambition. Energy, not in the most positive sense. Rajas, in the very positive sense, is our prana, is our energy. But when we use it in terms of in reference to your mind, there's a positive and negative. The positive as energy and ambition and drive. Instead of energy, we say drive and ambition. And is subject to irritation, irritability. Where we say a person's mind is tamas, it means it's just dull and sleepy and lethargic, you know, and doesn't have energy, and doesn't even have energy to get up sometimes, let alone do the right thing. And we all have tamas sometimes. I like to sleep in sometimes. I mean, it's not that we can't be tamasic, but when you say a person, this person is really tamasic, you're not saying that because they slept in the other day. You know, they just don't have energy to really participate in the world in any meaningful way. It's slothful, dark. It's not the best. So if we look at this creation as sattva, rajas, and tamas, we look at it as maya, that which projects as the whole creation, which also means the Vedas, means the karmakanda, is really, first part of the Vedas, is dealing with what goes on within the creation, samsara. So the first part of the Vedas has for its subject matter the samsara, this creation and how to be in it. That's the karmakanda. So he says to Arjuna, these Vedas, the karmakanda, has for its vishya, its sphere of influence, it can say, it's where what it's trying to educate you on is how to be within this samsara. So how to be a good samsari, how to be have the most shanti as a samsari in this world as you can possibly have. But what do we mean by samsari? It means the one who has that samsara in. The one who has that in affix, the one who has samsara. It means this is my world, all of the lokas, everything, this is my world, this is my arena for becoming, for gaining my happiness, for gaining my well-being, for improving my lot, all of these. That is my arena. So that's where the first part of the Vedas tries to help you to live in that arena in a dharmic way. To have dharma, and have dharma be primary for you as you try to make yourself to fulfill your desires within this duality. So he says to Arjuna, the first part of the Vedas with all of the flowery karmas and their results, they are all trigunya. Their subject matter is samsara. So then he says, nistrigunyaha bhava Arjuna. Hey Arjuna, bhava, may you become, it's an imperative, bhava. Hey Arjuna, may you become nistrigunya. One who is without or free of those three gunas. In other words, if you're free of those three gunas, you're free of the universe. Really, this universe is trigunya. This universe, the Maya, manifests as this whole creation. And then this body, mind, sense organs is also trigunya. Everything is. The whole Maya that is responsible for the manifestation of the creation is comprised of sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's not like maya is something else. It is these three strands, sattva, rajas, and tamas. That means everything in maya is a combination of sattva, rajas, and tamas. All of our pursuits, all of the energy where we direct our attention, sattva, rajas, and tamas in combination. There's nothing here within the duality of the objectifiable world that is not some combination or balance of sattva, rajas, and tamas. So when he says, hey Arjuna, you be one who is without, who is free of sattva, rajas, and tamas. There's only one thing that is free of sattva, rajas, and tamas, and that is Brahman, that is the self. So you have to be yourself. You have to discover yourself. And also, so that's on one level, because there's only one thing that is free of sattva, rajas, and tamas, because it has to be free of maya. There's only one thing that is satyam like that, and that is yourself, the Atma. It's absolutely at all times, whether now, here you are, this whole Trigunya samsara, I'm totally experiencing it. I couldn't experience it more. As long as you have sense organs and you're awake to it, or you're in a dream state, you are experiencing it, right? So he's not going to say to you, okay, kill yourself, you know. And even if you killed yourself, you'd be traveling in the other lokas and having a big papa to boot. Okay, so it's not about that. It's not about killing yourself. It's not about checking out. It's about recognizing yourself. May you be, you know, nishtvaigunya. May you be free of those gunas. May you be without those gunas. You are without those gunas. That's the fact. But you have to discover it. You have to discover that you are free of those three gunas, and you always will be and ever have been. So may you become, through knowledge, first of all, may you become nishtrigunya, not influenced by free of all of those, because that is your nature. May you become nirdwandva, one who is free of the opposites. That nir is negating it. Nirdwandva means the opposites, like hot and cold, for instance, or sukha and dukkha. Everything dwandva means, you know, the things, the polar opposites. May you be free of those polar opposites. I want this, I don't want this. I like this, I don't like that. You know, everything's on a continuum. May all of these opposites, let them be in samsara. Samsara is, all of the samsara is really a continuum of opposites. You know, and you're always going to be landing somewhere on that continuum. So what if you decide on the continuum of any dwandva that you only like this side of it, or you like this side of it, or you like to be here, or you like to be there? It's not going to be helpful in any way, because the whole continuum of all opposites are continually transmuting themselves, or continually changing. So be free of them, which means what? Let me be with whatever opposite is there. Let me be with the experience that is there. If I can be with the experiences that is there without being bound by my raga dvesha, by my likes and dislikes, then they're allowed to be and I'm allowed to be. Right? Otherwise, there's that sangha, there's that prasakta, there's the attachment to this little part of the opposite or this little part of the opposite. And you're just going to be crushed by it, actually. Because the universe and all of the different poles are not going to stop moving and giving you, you know, opposing experiences. So you only like one side? Well, then you're only going to be happy on the occasion that one little point of this continuum presents itself to you. So what is the best idea then? You know, allow them to be. Allow them to be. Have that karma yoga buddhi. Give up on all of that, you know. And appreciate Ishwara, appreciate your own being. So what Swamiji said when he was doing this verse, because I read his commentary on it, he said, Krishna has not really even talked about karma yoga yet. He's just introducing it. And so now he's telling Arjuna, be this, and be this, and be this. And Arjuna, what? How to do that? How to do that other than just, you know, being myself, but how do I do that now? And so this type of a verse is called a pratignya. Means it's the first, it's kind of like the first statement in a logical syllogism, you know? Like if I say there is fire on the hill, and say, I don't see any fire. Where's the fire? I don't see any fire. There's fire on the hill because you see smoke. I do see the smoke. You know? So therefore there's fire. So here's a pratignya that means an initial statement that has to be unfolded for you to say, oh, I see. So you have to take these as that. So be someone who is free of the opposites. And then he says, nitya sattvastaha, being free of the opposites. And then as long as you have this body, mind, sense organs, let your mind and body, but we'll see mostly mind, nitya sattvastaha. Let it always be abiding in the sattva guna. May your mind be predominantly sattva, because the sattva guna is shanti. It's shanti, It feels the ananda and the wholeness of yourself. It is free to learn and to study. It's available, you know. Like say when a class is going on and you're feeling distracted or upset or something that's happening, bothering you, then there's a lot of rajas, and there can be rajas and tamas and things overwhelming the buddhi, and there's no sattva there to be present, you know, to even learn. And so let the buddhi, let your buddhi be predominantly sattva. It says, but nitya, let it always be sattva. And it can always be sattva. Once we give up this raga dvesha, then even though the universe is churning and all these things are taking place, they're taking place in my buddhi, which is sattva, which is existing and has knowledge, jnanam, of my own self. That's how it ends up in the end. Right? But initially, with the karma yoga, you gain that sattva buddhi, right? And still has that kartritvam, that doership and enjoyership, and all of that is still there, that ahankara is still there, that I-notion is still there. But everything I do, I see, I do for Ishwara. And everything that comes my way, I do the prasada buddhi. And that gives me that nitya sattva staha, that staha, always abiding in, always nitya staha, always abiding in that sattva. And he says, and be near yoga kshema. All of these are going to have their own verses. Near yoga kshema. Be free of yoga kshema. This is a beautiful one. Yoga means my acquisitions. I acquire this, I acquire that, I acquire that. So I'm after getting all of these things so that I can be happy. That's the yoga. The kshema is protecting them. You know, first I get them, then I have to hang on to them. Right? So he says, nir yoga kshema. Be free of yoga kshema. Later in a verse he says, let me the one be the one. Let me, as Bhagavan, be the one who handles all your yoga kshema. I will bring to you your prarabdha. I will bring everything to you and I will protect everything. You know, everything that you need will be there. So have that shraddha. I'll give you all that you need and I'll let you keep all that you need. So surrender to me, let me have your yoga kshema. Don't you worry about it. So new yoga kshema. And the last one he says is atmavan. Atmavan here means may you become one who has an Atma. So it doesn't mean that. Atma here, it stands for your body, mind, sense organs. Right? So may you have control over. May the body, mind, sense organs belong to you, not to your emotions, not to your raga dvesha, not to your anger. Let it belong to you. So if you have a nitya sattva staha buddhi, then I am actually, this probably requires that you can do it in meditation maybe, but my buddhi becomes a spokesperson for me. My behavior, the buddhi's behavior, the choices, are the choices of Ishwara. Right? Because there's no overwhelm. In a sattva buddhi, there's no overwhelm by emotion. I'm not acting out of emotion. In fact, if I have an emotion, my buddhi comes into relationship with that emotion, still being itself sattva. That's what's so beautiful. So he's just basically saying to Arjuna, get control of yourself. Now, may you be one who has control of yourself. You have control of your mind, you have control of your emotions, you have control of your body. Yeah. And you're behaving in a way that your buddhi blesses, not in a behaving in a way that you have to apologize for. It's good to apologize. But maybe we don't have to behave that way in the first place because we don't have the pressure.
Om Shanti Shanti. Shanti Shanti Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om.